Going Linux, episode 247, setting up a VPN on Linux. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, setting up a VPN.
Hi, Bill. We've had some challenges getting our recording going today, so
yeah,
that's to say the least. Wow.
Wow.
Skype giving us problems. Wow. Mostly Skype.
Yeah, but we had to say Google Hangouts to the rescue.
Yes, exactly. And I think the reason that I'm having problems with Skype is I installed Mint 17. And so, of course, there's a new installation of Skype. Mm. So, it's not recognizing my USB headset mic. It recognizes it for playback. You know, I can hear over the headset from Skype. It's just the headset mic isn't available to be selected. And even if I set the headset as my default audio device, Skype doesn't pick it up as a valid device for some reason.
That is just weird.
It is just weird. So
it was working on the old version, right?
Exactly. It was working just fine. So, yeah, we're going to have to figure out how to record the Google Hangouts. We haven't really done that before, and we're not doing that this time. So we're not going to have a backup copy of our recording, as we usually do with Skype Call Recorder. But, hey, we'll power through this one, and hopefully Murphy will be banished from our systems for the rest of this recording.
I just want to point out, I didn't have anything to do with this time.
Yeah, I know. This is just one of those things you go through when you change your distribution or you provide a fresh install. You've got to go through all these little niggly things that go wrong that were working fine before. Yeah.
Hey, you know, I went and installed Ubuntu 14.04 on my other laptop, and I haven't had any issues with USB mics or anything like that. Everything's worked perfectly. I wonder if it's something that Mint did, you know, because they customize it. Maybe they changed something.
Nope. It's everywhere else in Mint. The USB mic works fine. The mixer mic works fine. The system mic, you know, the built-in laptop mic works fine. It's Skype.
Maybe you could just install an old version.
Yeah, that's the next thing I could try. But right now, we're using Google Hangouts, and that might just be our default for going forward. We'll see.
Okay. Well, hey, I got a couple real quick ones.
Sure.
I was looking at some ham radio logging software for Linux, and I saw one, but I haven't been able to find anything really too much about it. So if anybody is using CQR log, let me know, and do you recommend it? And then I was searching the web and just happened to do a search on open source and diabetes.
Okay.
And I actually found open source software that helps you with your diabetic logging and your insulin dosages and stuff. And it's at opensourcediabetes.org. And you should give them a look. The program is called GNU Glucose Control. So it's basically, from what I understand, a logging software for your blood sugars. But then on the website, they also have where if you have a pump, you can enter in what you need to change in it, or you're running a little too high, and it can actually give you your pump settings.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's really, really interesting. That's something I'll be having to use. You know, say I want to change something or I'm running too high or too low, I can go and say, let me just change this, and so I don't have to guess. You know, I say, okay, I only need this basal rate, and it kind of tells you, you know, where gives you an idea of where you need to go with it. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool that that had that glucose control because it runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux, according to the website. And I haven't installed it on Ubuntu because I just put a pretty fresh install. Just, you know, takes me forever to get everything installed back the way I like it. But I am definitely going to try to get that installed and see what it looks like. But if anybody is, you know, wants to give it a whirl, let me know.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you or someone you know uses insulin or has diabetes, this might be something that would be helpful. So
yeah, it's kind of near and dear to my heart lately.
Yeah, exactly. So that's good. So,
and anything that, you know, is, that can help manage your diabetes is important. And this, especially when this is a open source tool, that's even a plus. And then it runs on Linux too, according to the website. That's even a bigger plus. So
yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So getting back to the Ubuntu side of this, is this on the machine where your Arch install went south?
Yeah, pretty much.
So what happened there? Yeah.
I was trying to install some software. I installed some software. I wanted to computer was acting kind of wonky, so I said I'm just going to restart because it had been running for a while. I had been doing a lot of, you know, tinkering and changing settings, and it wouldn't reboot. It just refused. It just sat there at the grub menu, and then it'd start to load and it just stop.
So
I couldn't figure it. Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I wasn't enjoying Arch at that anyway. It was it wasn't straight Arch. It was the one I was testing.
Manjaro?
Yeah, Manjaro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have notes on it because I was trying to figure it out. And what I do, I did make a full backup before I started doing all the installs. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that backup onto a virtual machine and try to get it to do the same thing on a virtual machine. But I just wasn't enjoying it. Arch just doesn't like me. And I don't like Arch. It's just not for me. But it's for somebody else, great. I personally think it doesn't do what it needs to. It's too hard. It's not friendly. I mean, I like the Ubuntu side or the Debian side, you know, of things. It just seems to work better for me. But, you know, I can break Red Hat packages pretty quick too. So, so I just think it's, you know, it's just different. They just don't like me. But as far as, you know, Arch, I'm sure it's a great one. I just wouldn't recommend it for even these easy to install versions. I wouldn't recommend it over Mint or Ubuntu for a new user.
I think you and I are just spoiled. That's all.
I'm spoiled. I admit. Yeah. I like things to work.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that as well. That's what being spoiled is. With, you know, being able to install an operating system and have it just work. You know,
just. To put an additional thought, we've got a episode coming up where a big distro review, and I did a bunch of testing on a bunch of different distributions, and one that actually did very well is the Sabion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they did really well, but still not as friendly as Mint 17 or Ubuntu 14.04.
Right.
For user friendliness, and I would have to give it to Mint 17 with the Cinnamon desktop.
Yeah.
And a close second would be the Ubuntu desktop.
Right.
So that's kind of how I would do it. But see, I like the Ubuntu desktop better than the Cinnamon desktop. But for a new user, that Cinnamon desktop looks very approachable because it's got similar menus that the Windows XP used and stuff. So, I mean, I've used it. It's nice. I've used it on a couple different distributions, and that's when I was testing different distributions. If they had the Cinnamon desktop, that's what I loaded. It was fairly nice. I enjoy it quite a bit. I think that they've come a long way. But I can't remember. Is it Nemo? Is that the file manager?
Yes.
Okay. That's the only thing I couldn't remember for sure. But yeah, everything this worked really smoothly with the Cinnamon desktop. So, you know, if someone's brand new, I think Mint is the easiest path. And if you don't want to give them the Mint, for whatever reason, Ubuntu would be the close second for a new user. And then once they get more comfortable, then they can, I would suggest them kind of going out where they want to go.
Right, right. Yeah. Just an additional note, I was just reading in OMG Ubuntu that at the end of May, the Cinnamon repository for Ubuntu, which had been around for a while, is due to close. They're going to shut down for some reason. I haven't read the entire article yet, but I've read through the headline and partway through the article, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And let me put that in there right now.
Yeah. Wonder why they're doing that.
Don't know. I'll read the article in a little bit, and yeah.
Well, they might be trying to make sure people standardize. Oh no, that doesn't really work. I don't know. I mean, because there's other desktops for Ubuntu. You got the Lubuntu. You've got the what's the other one?
The Xubuntu. One.
Zubuntu. Yeah. So I mean, that's interesting. I wonder why they're going to do that.
Don't know. So there it is. It's an article from May, and development builds not aimed at regular users will continue to be provided through a separate package archive. Cinnamon is the default desktop of increasingly popular Ubuntu-based Linux Mint distribution, while previous versions of Ubuntu allow the shell to be installed through the Ubuntu repositories directly. 1404 LTS users have needed to add a third-party PPA. But now it's being shut down. Here we go. Why? The community community member and maintainer of the PPA explained the decision to shutter the archive on Ask Ubuntu. The Cinnamon stable PPA is indeed no longer being maintained. A nightly PPA is being kept for development purposes and should not be used on any sort of production machine. It can and will break at any time. I don't have an alternative to offer Ubuntu users at the moment apart from switching to a distribution that does support Cinnamon. Linux Mint. there are many such distributions out there, and I'm only hoping for someone to finally step up on the Ubuntu side to provide proper packages to its users. So from that, it sounds like there's a lack of support on the Ubuntu side.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, you can install any desktop, well, except Cinnamon from, you know, their store, or if you use Synaptic, which, you know, I always use Synaptic for 90% of my installations because I think it offers a little more granular control.
Sure.
But what I don't understand is why don't they just put the Cinnamon packages where if you want it, you can install it. I mean, come on, really?
Well, and reading back through this, it said that prior to 1404, they were in the Ubuntu repositories.
So it sounds like someone's just not they decided not to support them anymore.
Yeah. So in 1404, they required a PPA instead of being in the repositories, and so now it's not even going to be available in the PPA. So.
Oh, that's wrong.
If you use Ubuntu and you like the Cinnamon desktop.
Mint 17.
Mint 17 is for you. Yep. There you go.
Yep. It's the same thing as 1404. It's long-term support. You might as well just, you know, go ahead and move over there.
Yep. It works better anyway. Except for Skype.
It does not.
Except for Skype. I don't know.
It does not. Ubuntu 1404 is nice.
Okay. All right.
We'll argue about this off air.
Yeah, let's do that.
You'll win anyway, but...
Whatever. Neither one of us is going to change. Well, I'm not going to change. You're probably going to change from Ubuntu to something else next time we record, but that's another story.
Oh, come
story.
On. I had CrunchBang on my machine for a long time.
You did.
That was kind of weird, but okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into our VPN episode, shall we?
Sure.
Okay, so in episode 244, the Computer America episode number 73, I discussed setting up a particular VPN, and by the way, VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and that VPN was ProXPN, And the reason we discussed it on that episode of Computer America is that ProXPN had become a sponsor on Computer America. And so we walked through getting things set up. But there are many other VPN options out there. And in this episode, we'll talk about some of those options. We'll discuss some of the common settings for using a VPN on some of the most popular distributions.
According to the all-knowing Wikipedia, here's a definition of a VPN. A virtual private network, VPN, extends a private network across a public network, such as the Internet. It enables a computer to send and receive data across shared or public networks as if it is directly connected to the private network, while benefiting from the functionality, security, and management policies of the private network.
Right. So you can think about it this way. You're sitting in a coffee shop connected to their free Wi-Fi. If you check your bank account, you risk that anyone in the coffee shop with the right software can see what you're doing. They can log your keystrokes, capture your login, and your password. That is, if you aren't protected. Connecting via a VPN gives you that protection. It's not foolproof, but it certainly helps a lot.
So you'd use this if you're in some little podunk little coffee shop in some Middle East country. You probably want to use this to protect your login credentials.
Doesn't even have to be a Middle East country. It could be anywhere, anywhere. Yeah.
It could be where I in South Carolina, you know. We have
exactly.
A lot of podunk, and we have a little podunk thing right here.
It has nothing to do with the facility. It has to do with the clientele.
I mean, you know, you would use this at, you know, all kidding aside, you use this even at like a Starbucks because everybody's always connect there.
Right. And there could be anybody there with, you know, the cracking software tools necessary to log into your system if you're not protected. And essentially what this does is it's like you use the coffee shop's Wi-Fi to connect to a protected pipe that isolates everything you do from everyone else on the Wi-Fi network. So, yeah, you connect to the pipe on one end and the pipe on the other end connects to whatever website you're trying to connect to. And in between, it's like it's a metal pipe protecting your internet connection.
I'm trying to visualize what so it's basically like three pipes. The top pipe's your virtual private. The other is the unprotected internet. And it basically runs on top of it in its own little pipe to protect your information.
Right.
Sort of like that.
Yep, sort of like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it isolates your internet signal through the VPN traffic from everything else on the internet.
Yeah, and you really need to, if you're going to be using or you're really checking, you know, going to sensitive websites and putting in your passwords, you really need to use this. I don't care, you know, because where I am, there is free Wi-Fi at, you know, at the fast food restaurants, at I don't go to bars, but there's bars, you know, at the coffee shops, you actually see it at Walmart. I mean, there's open Wi-Fi everywhere, so this is where you definitely want to have a VPN if you're going to do anything really sensitive, like bank details.
Right, absolutely.
Or just wait till you get home.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't even have to be sensitive stuff. If you log into anything and enter your username and password, and you're not protected by a VPN connection, anybody could see that information. So,
could they log your keystrokes on a Linux machine?
They could. They could. You know, sometimes you need some specialized software to do that already installed on your Linux machine. But
no, I'm talking about the people running Windows. You know, the guy sitting there with his little tools. You know, does it work against Linux?
You know what? I think that most of the tools run on Linux as opposed to run on Windows and are designed to attack Windows rather than the other way around. But, you know, that's...
because not everybody runs Linux.
Yes, exactly. And the people producing malware and doing this nefarious things, they're not stupid either. They don't want to be infected. So they're targeting the Windows computers and they're using Linux or Mac or something that's less susceptible to this stuff to do that targeting. So,
they'll attack it, but they won't use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Except as a test to make sure their attack is working.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So one of the things that you need to be aware of is that when you're on the internet, you need some sort of security, and the VPN helps you to do that. Whether you have a firewall or anti-malware or antivirus protection on your Linux machine, the VPN adds a layer of security that actually provides a better insulation from everything else on the public Wi-Fi connection that you're using. Another reason that you might want to use a VPN connection, quite frankly, is that you are, let's say, in one country that blocks access to certain things that are available in another country. So for example, if you're sitting in any country other than the UK, you can't connect to some BBC, which is the British Broadcasting Corporation, software and sites, because you need to be a UK citizen in order to access that stuff. Or you're sitting in China and you can't access some US sites, or you're in Germany or some other country and you want to access Netflix or something else that's available in the US and not available in your country. Well, by using a VPN, the server you choose is in a specific country. And so when you choose that server, it appears to the internet that you're connecting as though you were in that country. So this is one way to get Netflix if your country blocks Netflix, is to use a VPN and choose a server in a country that actually offers Netflix or any other service that may
be. I got an admission. I got an admission. I've used the VPN to watch Doctor Who.
There you go. Perfect. I'm sure you're not the only one.
My sonic screwdriver just wouldn't work without this VPN, okay? What do you want? I use that to watch Doctor Who.
Okay.
Because my cable company decided to drop that channel. Blasted cable company.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
awful. Yeah.
We won't go there, but I'm just saying, I'm not saying you should use it for anything illegal, but I'm just thinking, you know, if you can't, you know, if you want to watch Netflix or something and you can't do it where you're from, or you could be traveling to another country and they just don't allow it, you can use the VPN. Or, you know, if you're a British citizen, you're over in America and you want to watch, you know, your Doctor Who, you know, you've got to have a way to do it, so...
That's
there's way, because, you know, they pay fees over there for television. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, I'll be glad to send them their license fee if they just would let me watch it without using, don't have to jump through hoops.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, let's get into how we set up a VPN connection. Okay. And do I need to buy anything? That's, you know, can I get this service for free?
Yes. Many Linux distros, including Mint and Ubuntu, come with everything you need to configure your VPN connection, and it comes pre-installed. I love that pre-installed word. Some, like Kali Linux, do not. If you find that your VPN settings are grayed out, then see the link in the show notes on how to fix this. You may simply need to add missing packages. So, you're saying that Mint and Ubuntu have it, but Kali doesn't? Isn't Kali based on Ubuntu?
Well, it's a feature of the network manager that you're using, and I believe that Kali uses something that's different from what Mint and Ubuntu use as a network manager.
Oh, okay.
So what the show notes give you is the command for installing network manager, OpenVPN for GNOME, and the PPTP and several other pieces of software that you need. So, and you'll know that if you go into whatever your system uses for network management, as you try to configure your VPN, if it's grayed out, you're going to need some software. And we're giving the aptitude-r install command here. So it assumes that your system is using Aptitude as the installer, mm-hmm. which Mint and Ubuntu do use and Kali uses as well. But you may need to modify this slightly if your system uses Yum or something else for installation. So
now, were these commands that you've included in the show notes, will they install everything you need? Say I don't have VPN installed at all.
Right.
Can I just copy and paste these into my terminal and they'll install everything I need?
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole idea here. So
okay, I was just trying to make sure that there is, you know, for anybody that's going to use it, that it had everything they needed to just copy paste.
Right. Absolutely. And so again, this assumes you're on a Debian derivative, that you're mm-hmm. using the GNOME desktop or something that uses GNOME underneath it, like Cinnamon. And so you may need to do some research as to what packages are needed for you if you're on an RPM distro. But at least we have the bits and pieces here that are necessary for Ubuntu users or any derivative of Ubuntu, if it's not already installed.
I haven't installed any VPN software in my new Ubuntu install, so I'm going to cheat and use yours so I don't have to.
Yeah, so on Ubuntu, you probably don't even need to run this command because it probably just works. So we can check that out as we're going through here.
Let me give you a definition for OpenVPN, just so everybody knows what page we're talking on. OpenVPN is an open source VPN solution that is free. You might want to find a VPN provider that will, for a fee, give you access to VPN servers in multiple countries. By using a server in a country different from your own, you will look to the internet like you're browsing the web from that country. That will give you access to services and websites that might be blocked from your own location or are available only in that location. So yeah, we kind of already touched on that part of the definition. So do you know any of these providers, and what do the fees look like?
They vary. So if you simply Google for VPN and free, you'll get a whole list of VPN providers that use OpenVPN for free. And they'll have a list of servers that you can use. Some require you to set up keys for security purposes and so on. But if you use the PPTP connection that we're going to recommend here, it's easy to set up and you don't have to set up any sort of keys or anything like that. It's not as secure as using the other method, but it's certainly a lot easier to get set up and get running.
Oh,
so
okay.
PPTP is point-to-point tunneling protocol. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And so for Linux Mint and Ubuntu, as we've said, there's no client that you have to download for these OpenVPN solutions for Pro XPN and for most of the paid VPN services if you're using a PPTP connection. There may be clients that you need to download if you are using these on Mac or Windows, and typically they're going to work just fine. But as we've said, for Linux distributions, typically everything's already pre-installed. And so the setup instructions that you go through are essentially go to your network settings from the System Settings Manager or by clicking on the network settings in the system tray. And once you've got that open, you click add or the plus sign, whichever is there for you, and that'll add a new connection. You'll be taken to a screen that lets you set up that connection. And if you're asked to select an interface, choose VPN. Then you click create. Are you following along as we go?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I could hear the clicking. So
sorry, I was looking at some of the providers there.
Yeah, no problem at all. So the next thing you do after you click create is you select next and select the connection type. In this case, you want PPTP, mm-hmm. Or it may say point-to-point tunneling protocol, and then click create. And now you've got a configuration almost ready to go. You just have to get into the VPN panel there that appears under general, add the VPN node or the server of your choice into the gateway. So the node starts the PPTP connection. And in our show notes, we'll have a list of the Pro XPN servers. You can find servers for PPTP connections for whatever service you want to use. And you just enter in not the IP address, if it gives you the IP address, but I'm sure you could do that. But the name of the server is all you need to enter in there. So, for example, if you're using the Pro XPN connection from the UK, it's pptp-uk1.proxpn.com. That's the only thing you need to enter in there.
That is, this really kind of makes it easy to understand. I mean, once you get past all the little acronyms and stuff, it's not as difficult as you think it is.
Right. Now, ProXPN is a paid service, so you have to go and sign up before this will function. You can get it set up up front, but until you have an account, then it's not going to work for ProXPN. For the OpenVPN solutions, you can go in, and I think you still need an account in OpenVPN on one of these free services. But once you have that in the setup, it's going to ask you for your email address or your username, and then your password. That is the password from the service that you subscribe to. And depending on the service that you use, you may need to select something like an encryption, an MPPE encryption, like the one that you need for ProXPN. That can be set up by clicking on Advanced. And you want to use point-to-point encryption, MPPE, and allow stateful encryption. Select that under security and compressions, and then click OK. And that's the setup for ProXPN. It may vary a little bit for other services, but they will have clear instructions as to what it requires for that service on the website when you sign up for it, or somewhere on their website in the way of an FAQ or instructions or something like that. Once you click Save, then the next time you click your wireless or your wired connection from the system panel, there will be a new toggle switch on Ubuntu and on Linux Mint that says VPN connections or ProXPN or whatever you named it. And you can turn that on and give it a couple of seconds, and then you have a secure VPN connection that is established and ready to go.
So how bad does this affect your bandwidth? When you're using a VPN solution, does it really hit it hard?
Well, it depends on how many users are on that VPN. So sometimes when I connect using the ProXPN account that I have, it runs just as fast as it does without the VPN connection. There are other times when it's noticeably slower. So it depends a little bit. You will typically notice some degradation in your speed, but it's not unmanageable for most people unless you've got an extremely slow internet connection to begin with. Yeah. So
that's why if you're going to do anything, you need some speed, you go ahead and get a premium account so you get a little better service.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Makes sense.
Yep. Okay. And that's it. It's as simple as that. You can follow along with the instructions in the show notes, or you can connect to one of the free VPN services and follow along with their instructions. But ours might give you a little clearer setup instructions for setting up on Linux. Most of these sites are geared to the Windows users or the Mac users and may not have clear instructions for Linux. But between their instructions and ours in our show notes, you should be able to get set up without any trouble. And of course, as always, if you have any issues, send us an email or a voicemail or however you want to communicate to us, and we'll try to answer your questions for you and get you set up and ready to go.
Yep.
Okay. So, Bill, that wraps up our episode. Do you have anything in the way of an application pick or a tip for our users this time around?
I do. I actually have one. It's you can use it on Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's a Chrome browser. I'm just throwing this in on the application, but it's a Chrome browser extension that offers a VPN. They're right now in a free trial version of it. It's called ZenMate.
Okay.
It's not for the complete system. It's just for your browser, from what I understand. And there's only limited there's limited cities. They have, I think, one in New York, one in England, and there's another server somewhere. But
what does it do? What's the purpose of this thing?
Basically, it's a VPN. It tells your browser that when you're, say, I want to go watch, say I'm a British citizen and I want to watch my Doctor Who, and I need to get my Doctor Who fix. I would activate this and tell it to connect to the server in England. So when any traffic goes to that server in England via their service, the ZenMate, because you have to sign up for it. And what happens is, it looks like you're in England. So I'm the British citizen. I want to get my Doctor Who fix. It thinks I'm in England and I'm sitting in Texas, and, you know, I can watch my Doctor Who and I'm happy. And, you know, and then when I'm done, I can either tell it to, you know, run everything through England, or there's a server closer, you know, still going through that virtual private network of theirs. So it offers a little quick security. I wouldn't say it's as secure as a full VPN setup, but it's better than using nothing.
Okay, so it's a VPN for your Chrome browser.
Yeah, basically, yes. And you can use it on any of the operating systems. And, you know, like I said, it's not going to be secure as a full VPN, but it's better than nothing. You know, it's something that if you can put on multiple machines, if you don't have time to set up a bunch of VPNs on your Windows or OS X or whatever, or Linux. So, you know, it's a quick and dirty way.
Right.
How about you, Larry? What do you have?
Well, just one more comment on ZenMate. If you have a Chromebook, our recommendations on getting set up with a VPN won't work. So ZenMate is the way to go on your Chromebook.
So it does work on Chromebook.
Absolutely. I've used it. It works fine.
Nice.
Yeah. So my application pick is something we've discussed in the past. It's a screenshot application called Shutter.
Oh, I love that thing.
Yeah, I use it all the time. And they've just announced a new release. They've gone from version 0.90 to 0.91. and OMG Ubuntu has an article that discusses the update, and it's fixed a number of bugs. Bugs that, quite frankly, didn't really affect me, but I went ahead and used the download link from the OMG Ubuntu site to do the installation. There's also a PPA available for Ubuntu and Linux Mint and other Ubuntu derivatives if you want to use that. But I just grabbed the installer for Ubuntu 14.04 LTS, which of course is the base for Mint 17, and installed it and updated my Shutter without any trouble at all. I'm sure eventually it will make its way into the repositories. But for now, ready to go.
Sounds good. Just an additional note on all this. Everybody's going to say we're Ubuntu and Mint fans because everything we've kind of talked about has been where it works on Ubuntu. The only reason that that kind of happened this time and is because we both use a Debian-based derivative. And most people coming into Linux starting out will use either Ubuntu or Mint. It just depends on, you know, they're not gonna jump and use Arch. They might, but I doubt it.
Right.
They're not gonna use Slackware immediately. You know, they might later on once they learn, but they're gonna use Mint or Ubuntu or OpenSUSE or one of the others that are geared to new users. And I'm not saying that to try to be offensive. I'm just, you know, letting them know that we are fanboys, okay?
But yeah, we are.
We try to we try to have everybody include every distribution that we can. Sometimes yes. it's a little heavier on the Debian side, and sometimes it's more on for all distributions. It just depends on what we're talking about.
Right. So if you are running a non-Debian distribution, go ahead and take a look at the Shutter website and see if there's a download there on their downloads page for your distribution, or you can compile it from source code if you're so inclined. But version 0.91 is now available, and if you go to their main website for Shutter, you'll see that they make a big deal of the subtle changes to the icon. You know, same okay. same colors, a little different implementation of the icon. Not so much that you would jump up and down and say, hey, this is the greatest icon since sliced bread. You know, it's very similar to what it was before, quite frankly.
So anyway, my goodness, this is great.
Yes, exactly. It's not like moving the buttons from the right-hand side of the window to the left-hand side of the window or anything.
Oh, that was low. That was low.
Okay. I know. Anyway, so that wraps things up for us for this episode. Our next episode will be listener feedback. And until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux Podcast Google Plus community.
We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done. Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.